lightly. "Not so much as a word," he agreed. "I appreciate your self-control. I wonder whether Miss Chandler, too, is likely to insist on your presence." On the verge of admitting that she couldn't imagine Willie needing support, Daisy bit back the words and said instead,
"You'll have to ask her."
"There's no point in you leaving and coming back. You'd better just stay. While we wait, Miss Layton's account included a few details neither you nor the Chief Inspector mentioned, as is only natural. Would you say it was accurate? Off the record."
"I didn't notice any discrepancies."
She wasn't about to confess that she hadn't listened half the time. She swallowed a yawn. "Did it spark any ideas? Remind you of details you left out before, perhaps?"
The only noteworthy point was Vera's marked aversion to Cartwright, surely not relevant to the murder. Daisy shook her head. "Not immediately. I'll think about it. Something may occur to me later." The brief exchange made her wonder more than ever on what terms Underwood and Alec had parted. Rare indeed were the police officers who recognized that her opinion might prove useful. She was sorry she had no suggestions to offer. The brisk tap of footsteps approached the door. Willie came in, her tread light, and glanced round the room as Pennycook trudged in after her.
"Hello, Daisy. Still here? But no Alec."
"It's not his case, darling. Detective Inspector Underwood is in charge. He kindly let me stay with Vera."
"How do you do, Inspector?"
Willie stepped forward with a friendly smile, her hand held out.
"I'm Wilhelmina Chandler."
Underwood shook hands and invited her to sit.
"It was good of you to let Daisy support Vera. I'm sure you did your best, but she's absolutely shattered anyway, poor thing. She doesn't do well under fire." "I assure you, Miss Chandler, in no sense was Miss Layton under fire."
"Badly phrased. Vera deals better with children than adults, as I'm better with numbers than words. Now that we've got that out of the way, let's get going."
"Would you like Mrs. Fletcher to stay?"
"I don't need support, but don't make Daisy leave. By the look of her, she'll never move again."
"Thanks for nothing."
"You've been ill. You're entitled to look as if you're at death's door." "You're welcome to take a nap, Mrs. Fletcher," said Underwood, and mouthed silently, "Again."
Daisy glared at him. She had hoped he hadn't noticed. While she'd been snoozing, he had been disconcertingly wide awake, it seemed.
"Let's get down to business, Inspector," said Willie. "If you want to know what I saw, you're out of luck. If you want to know what I smelled..."
10. This time, Daisy listened carefully, in case the inspector quizzed her afterwards. It was easier to keep her mind on what was said, because Willie's voice was bright with interest, and she fenced with Underwood, just as Daisy had.
"Why on earth do you want to know why the three of us moved south?" she demanded. "The more I know about those involved, the quicker I'll be able to solve the case."
"Those involved? We're not involved. Someone took the liberty of using our house to dispose of..."
"That's as may be, Miss Chandler. Supposing you have nothing to do with the murder, it was probably committed by someone who knew the house was empty."
"The neighbors?"
"Or the house agent, or someone who was aware of your plans. I'm still asking you to tell me why you moved."
Willie grinned and complied.
"Not many firms are willing to hire a woman accountant," she finished. "I couldn't afford not to take the position."
"I've never had anything to do with accountants," Underwood admitted.
What's the difference between them and bookkeepers?
We're the ones who check the books to make sure they're properly kept. Accurate arithmetic and accounts balanced. No errors, no fraud. That's my job for the present. Senior partners advise companies on the law and so forth.
Friday. Anyone in your sights?
That's confidential.
In other words, yes.
I can't say any more. It's an interesting theory, though.
What is?
Underwood asked irritably.
I assume you're proposing that someone either intended to kill me and botched it, or hoped to intimidate me into botching an audit.
Or just distract you from doing a thorough job, Daisy suggested.
Rubbish!
The inspector frowned at her.
I'm not proposing any such notion, Miss Chandler. Especially your second theory. Killing someone just to intimidate a third person may be something that goes on in the East End or in Huddersfield, for all I know. But not on my patch.
Good. Then you won't keep pestering me to disclose confidential information.
Let's see if I have better luck with non-confidential information. What date did you move into Cherry Trees?
The afternoon of Saturday the 8th. Isabel came over on the 1st and spent the week making sure everything was ready for Vera and me. I don't know how much time she spent at the house, but I assure you, she didn't use any of it to push a stranger down the stairs.
Underwood eyed her narrowly.
Put like that, it does seem unlikely, he conceded. But perhaps the victim was not a stranger. I'm not going to be making any headway until she's been identified. You didn't recognize her?
I didn't see her. To put it crudely, I smelled her, and that was quite sufficient. I can't express how grateful I am that Mr. Fletcher was present to take charge.
Willie smiled at Daisy.
Tell me about it. Start with why you invited him to the house.
As far as the facts relating to the dinner invitation and the corpse's discovery were concerned, Willie's statement differed little from Daisy's own and what Daisy had heard of Vera's.
When Mr. Fletcher came back, she finished, he said we could leave. And we did, as fast as possible.
Who can blame you? Mrs. Fletcher says you were the first to suggest that the previous owner of the house is likely to be either the victim or the killer. Is that correct?
I can't remember whether I was first. It seems a reasonable proposition.
Did you ever meet her?
Briefly. Twice, actually. Miss Sutcliffe found the house and liked it, but of course she didn't make any decisions without us. Vera and me, looking it over and giving our approval. Mrs. Gray was present when we called, and the house agent, too. I was far more interested in the house than in its owner. She didn't make much impression then, and when I met her again to sign the papers at her lawyer's, I was concentrating on the contract.
Do you recall her lawyer's name?
Ainsley. Ours is Butterworth.
Would you recognize Mrs. Gray if you saw her again?
I doubt it. I'm not good at faces. If she's the body, judging by what I've gathered about its condition, definitely not.
You ladies didn't find any of her effects in the house when you moved in? A handbag, clothes, suitcase, nothing at all?
I assume Isabel would have mentioned it if she had come across something other than the household effects that were part of the deal. She certainly would if she'd found a handbag with anything of value in it.
Does Mrs. Gray have any relatives that you're aware of?
For all I know, she could have swarms. I haven't the foggiest. Surely Mr. Ainsley must know.
The solicitor? Yes.
Underwood asked a few more questions in a desultory way. Where Willie had lived before the Huddersfield lodgings, how long she had lived there, whether she had known the other two previously, the name of her firm in High Wycombe. Having provided the last, Willie begged, "Please don't talk to the partners before I've had a chance to tell them what's happened."
"We may not have to see them at all. Certainly not before you go to work tomorrow. I'll have more questions for you at a later date. We'll wrap it up for now, though. Thank you."
"Not at all. It's been interesting. By the way, I really must have my business suit for tomorrow."
"If you and the other ladies each write a list of necessities, I'll see what I can do. Pennycook, fetch Miss Sutcliffe now, with apologies for keeping her waiting."
Daisy was half eager to see whether any new information would emerge, half dying to go and have a drink with Alec. She doubted Isabel would need support any more than Willie had. On the other hand, her chair was much more comfortable than anything in the bar. She had sunk into its embrace to the point where getting out would be quite a struggle. "Would you like me to stay again?" she asked.
"Why not?"
said the inspector, sardonically. From the doorway, Willie waved to Daisy. Pennycook followed her out. Underwood cocked an eyebrow at Daisy. "Nothing," she said regretfully. "I hope Alec doesn't hit the roof when he finds out I'm attending your interviews, especially as he isn't."
"It's highly irregular. Please blame it on your friends, not on me."
"Don't worry, I will. I just wish I was being more helpful. I'm glad you didn't ask Vera about identifying the body."
"It's a nasty job to ask anyone to do, even when the person is strong-minded and the body's in reasonably good shape. Failing a belated missing person alert that fits, I expect we'll have to rely on the cleaning woman. Not the most desirable kind of identification, always supposing she agrees to do it and doesn't go off into a fit of hysterics. Which,"
he added, his thin face gloomy,
"she probably will."
Isabel arrived. She had no objection to Daisy's presence. "Vera asked me to thank you for staying with her, Daisy. She was too shattered to remember when she was allowed to leave the room." She glared at Underwood. Daisy jumped to his defense. "Not the inspector's fault," she said.
"Perhaps you can tell me, Miss Sutcliffe, why Miss Layton was upset when I asked whether she had heard any gossip at school."
"Well, she disapproves of gossip on principle. But she really was pretty upset when she came back, and I've never known her to react so strongly before." "Talking about murder and finding decayed bodies isn't exactly soothing to start with," Daisy pointed out. "Besides, she's afraid gossip about it will result in her losing her job."
"Thank you, Mrs. Fletcher. She told you that?"
"She told all of us," said Isabel, while Daisy was examining Underwood's gratitude for sarcasm. In her experience, detectives were sparing of thanks, especially directed to her. He seemed sincere. She decided she rather liked him. All the same, she kept quiet as he went on questioning Isabel. After the formalities of name, past addresses, dates, and so forth, and her description of the afternoon's events, the inspector said,
"You've spent a good deal of time in the house for the past 2 weeks. You never noticed a smell in the passage by the cellar door?"
"Yes, but it wasn't the smell of death and decay. Mrs. Hedger, our char, scrubs it with carbolic every time she comes. I've told her she's overdoing it. She insists that what with the drains and my coming in from the garden with manure on my boots, it's necessary. She's one of those people it's a waste of time to argue with. Stubborn and set in her ways as they come. I wouldn't have chosen her, but she did for Mrs. Gray before, so it was easiest just to keep her on."
"Not so easy to find cleaning women these days," Underwood sympathized. "Mr. Fletcher also smelled carbolic. Which days does Mrs. Hedger oblige?
Monday, Wednesday and Friday.
Today's Sunday, and the carbolic smell was still evident. No wonder none of you noticed any odor that escaped from the cellar. You have no other servants?
No. That reminds me, though, the Greys had a live-in cook-housekeeper and a lady's maid, and a full-time gardener. I can't recall their names, but the gardener recommended a jobbing gardener to me, chap called Lassiter.
Presumably Lassiter would know the name of the man who sent me to him. If not, where to find him? This Lassiter's a local man.
I don't know his address. I've only needed him once. I left a message at the newsagent's in Station Road, as the other man advised, and Lassiter turned up next morning to do some digging for me.
We'll find him.
Underwood made a note.
Miss Sutcliffe, as well as spending more time in the house than either of your friends do, I gather you saw more of Mrs. Gray in the course of buying the house. Tell me about her.
Medium height, good figure, dark hair, bobbed, but longer than mine, and expensively waved, Isabel said promptly. 35 or so, at a guess, but looked younger. She dressed well, expensively. Nothing fancy that I saw. Just a bit too smart for a country town, in my opinion. So was her makeup. I don't use the stuff. Not much jewellery, but what she wore looked good. Not that I'm much of a judge. Usually pearls, both necklace and earrings, and a largish ruby on a ring finger.
You have an observant eye, Miss Sutcliffe.
Running a boarding house, or private hotel, if you want to dull it up, teaches you to notice people.
I dare say. Have you heard any gossip about her, from the neighbours? I take it you're not as unalterably opposed to gossip as Miss Layton.
Isabel grinned.
Heavens no. As the neighbours have yet to call, they're no help. I did find out a bit from Mrs. Gray herself, and from the house agent.
Oh, what did they have to say?
The agent told me she was much younger than her husband, and his second wife. Albert Gray had plenty of brass. She pronounced the word with the short Yorkshire vowel. He was tight-fisted, though. His only extravagance was his wine cellar. He'd pay for her fancies to a point, and then shut the spigot. She wasn't at all happy. Mr. Vaughan had no qualms over gossiping about his client.
You didn't like him, Underwood stated.
Not much, I admit. I wouldn't have chosen him to deal with, but as it happens, he's a relative of one of Willie's bosses, who recommended him.
Ah, nor you didn't like Mrs. Gray.
Discontent sours people, don't you think? Even though he'd died, last April I think it was, and she had inherited a fortune, she stayed sour. That was my impression. She told me herself she'd been married to a miser and couldn't wait to get out of the place. A long holiday abroad was her immediate aim, before deciding where to live.
Did she mention where, exactly? Abroad is a big place.
Paris, to start with. Albert Gray had refused to spring for a holiday in gay Paris. Then she was going to stay with friends on the Riviera, possibly followed by Italy.
No names for the friends? He asked unhopefully. Or which Paris hotel?
She had no reason to mention them, as there wasn't the slightest chance I'd know them.
Cannes? Monte Carlo?
Isabel shook her head.
Just the Riviera.
Boasting. That sort.
Underwood nodded his understanding.
If you remember anything else about her destination,
I'll let you know, of course. Not likely, though.
Did she have any relatives?
Not that she mentioned, but why should she?
All right. Can you tell me any more about Vaughan?
Not about his relatives,
other than the one I mentioned, who's in Willie's firm. He's Donald Vaughan's brother-in-law, I think she said. Vaughan married his sister. Vaughan's pushy, but I suppose house agents have to be. Flashy and full of himself. A bit of a bounder, perhaps. I don't want to introduce him. You'll talk to him yourself, Inspector?
Most certainly.
You may decide I'm talking through my hat. She hesitated. It seemed to me there was something between them, Vaughan and Mrs. Gray. Something more personal than his finding a buyer for her house.
Indeed.
Nothing definite. Nothing I could swear to.
A place for me to start. You're a detective's dream, Miss Sutcliffe.
They smiled at each other. At once, Daisy wondered if there was a possibility of something between them in the future. Not much chance. At Underwood's age, he was probably married, and Isabel would remain a surplus woman. Had Mrs. Gray been a member of the superfluous ranks? Had she, like Daisy, beaten the odds to find a husband? Unlike Daisy, though, it didn't sound as though she had found love, or even contentment, far less happiness. More to the immediate point, had she found death in a dark cellar? 11. Alec had taken a seat in the corner of the saloon bar, most distant from the bar itself. Two wooden settles against the walls met in the corner, and two spindle-back chairs occupied the other two sides of the small table, its top marred by countless rings, in spite of a scattering of coasters. Like most police officers, Alec preferred to sit where he could see the whole room, especially the entrance, whether or not he was expecting someone, or trouble. He had opted for a pint of home-brewed bitter rather than whiskey. He might be glad of a clear head later. D.I. Underwood was sure to want to talk to him again. After a gulp of the excellent brew, he nursed his beer and sat back to watch and listen. His fellow imbibers looked to be a moderately prosperous lot, from various walks of life. Tradesmen, clerks, farmers. Commercial travellers, a professional or two. There were two women, staid matrons obviously out with their husbands. Nowhere appeared the excitement, inevitable, if any were aware of the murder. Sergeant Harris had struck Alec as a man not to be trusted to hold his tongue, but these were not the sort of people to whom he'd chatter. His friends would be in the public bar, where Alec would stick out like a sore thumb. Tom Tring, his sergeant of many years, would be the perfect man to find out what was being talked about there. But Tom had retired just a month ago. Not to mention that this was Underwood's job. Alec was finding it deuced difficult to keep the fact in mind. The saloon bar drinkers were not likely to be the sergeant's confidants, but they were the sort the Greys might have consorted with. Alec, in his oft-assumed guise as a civil servant, was more one of them than D.I. Underwood was likely to be. Chatting to them, he might learn something useful about the Greys. So Alec was welcoming when a newly arrived couple, after greeting two or three people and glancing round the room for seats, came over to his table.
"Do you mind if we sit here?"
the man said.
"Quite a crowd tonight."
"My pleasure."
"Thanks. The usual, Alice. What's yours?"
he asked Alec as he pulled out a chair to seat his companion.
"Bitter, thanks, but I'm not in need."
He hoisted his half-full tankard.
"Get it while you can. A few more crammed in here, and you won't be able to catch Mickey's eye for love nor money."
"Well, money might work."
He went off to battle the swarm at the bar, shaking hands here and there as he went.
I'm Alice Barnes, the woman introduced herself. She was 50-ish, round-faced with smile lines, dressed in good but well-worn clothes. That's my husband, Brian, that was. He won't be back for at least 20 minutes.
Fletcher, it's obvious Mr. Barnes is on good terms with everyone here.
It's Doctor. Most of them are Brian's patients, or their wives and children are, Mrs. Barnes said dryly. Alec wanted to ask whether the Greys had been Barnes's patients. However, if he gave in to temptation, the inspector would have every right to be incensed. The doctor's wife continued. You're not from these parts, Mr. Fletcher?
London. Just visiting. An old friend of my wife's moved here recently, from the north.
Ah, so you've escaped the reunion. Sensible man. I don't believe I've met anyone who's recently moved here from the north. She paused invitingly. Alec saw no reason not to oblige.
Miss Chandler, she and two friends have bought cherry trees in Orchard Road.
Oh, yes. Someone did mention that three ladies had moved in. About a fortnight ago, wasn't it? You'll think it disgraceful, Mr. Fletcher, that I haven't called on them yet. I'm afraid I'm very bad about introducing myself to newcomers. I tend to wait until I meet them at someone else's house. I'm a nurse, you see, and though I don't work full-time, I'm kept pretty busy in Brian's practice.
Two of them are working women, so they'll quite understand.
Now I remember. Teachers, aren't they?
One is. Miss Chandler is an accountant, duly chartered.
Is she? How enterprising. One is reminded that until the Crimean War, nursing was not considered a suitable occupation for a respectable female. It seems a pity that it takes war to persuade men of our capabilities. I really must make Miss Chandler's acquaintance. Hoping he had been helpful in breaking the ice for Daisy's friends, Alec was afraid he was merely meddlesome. As a policeman, he ought to know better when they might yet prove to be involved in the murder. But he'd taken a liking to the three women, bravely making their own way in what was still a man's world. It was one of Daisy's attributes that had first drawn him to her. The doctor returned, two tankards in one hand and a sherry glass in the other. He set them down as his wife introduced Alec, and they shook hands. From London, Mrs. Barnes added.
Then you won't be interested in the latest local rumour.
Brian, you can't say that and just stop there, she protested. Mr. Fletcher won't mind. She cast a questioning glance at Alec.
Not at all,
Alec said, hoping he looked politely resigned, not all agog. The subject of the rumour was not difficult to guess.
Apparently, the police have taken over Whitford Snug.
That bumptious Sergeant Harris? What's wrong with the police station?
It's an inspector from High Wycombe, dear. He's interviewing witnesses.
Witnesses to what? The doctor shrugged.
No one seems to know.
A decent rumour should have more meat to it, Mrs. Barnes complained, laughing. Don't you agree, Mr. Fletcher?
Some rumours are best fleshed out,
he said cautiously, thinking of those that aid the police.
Others are better left to die.
Unmourned,
Dr. Barnes agreed.
This one, I suspect, is true, and when the details are revealed in the fullness of time, we may well wish it wasn't.
A police investigation is bound to bring bad news to someone. His wife firmly changed the subject. Now that's enough of that.
Mr. Fletcher has been telling me about his wife's friend who recently moved here. Miss Chandler. She sounds like an interesting...
And here she comes,
Alec interrupted, standing and waving as Willie entered the bar and looked round.
Oh, good, Mrs. Barnes exclaimed. You will introduce us, won't you?
Willie's face lit up as she saw Alec. She started to come over, but hesitated as she realized he was not alone. It was not the best time for her to meet the Barneses, but once she had appeared, it was inevitable. Alec waved again, wondering where Daisy was and what she was up to. He couldn't ask Willie in the presence of the others. The doctor stood up as she arrived. Alec made the introductions, and Barnes asked,
What are you drinking, Miss Chandler? My turn,
said Alec, seating Willie, though he didn't really want to leave her alone with them.
Not at all. It's still my round.
Willie looked as if she was in need of a brandy, but she glanced at Mrs. Barnes's glass and opted for sherry. The doctor went off. He wouldn't be gone long. The crowd was thinning as dinner time approached. With luck, the Barneses would soon join the exodus. The ladies were making small talk. Willie, careful of what she said, Mrs. Barnes, with apparently genuine friendliness.
I hope you'll enjoy living here, said the latter. You and your friends. I'm looking forward to meeting them. And to making your wife's acquaintance, Mr. Fletcher.
She turned back to Willie.
Mrs. Fletcher will be joining us, I imagine.
I'm not sure. She's rather tired.
Thank you, she added as Dr. Barnes returned with her drink, saving her from further explanation. Or further evasion, Alec thought, trying not to show his misgivings.
What a pity. Some other time, perhaps. London's not far, and we have excellent train service. It's very easy to get up to town for concerts and the theatre.
Not to mention shopping, the doctor teased.
Well, the choice here is very limited, Mrs. Barnes said indignantly. And not much better in High Wycombe. I don't go shopping in London very often. Have you had a chance to look round our shops here, Miss Chandler?
Not much. I'd be glad to know which you recommend. They chatted for a few more minutes. Then Mrs. Barnes told her husband to finish off his beer as they had to go.
I left jacket potatoes in the oven, she explained, searching through her handbag. Bother, I've left my diary at home. But I'll be in touch when I have it beside me.
The Barneses left. As soon as they were out of earshot, Alec turned to Willie. She spoke first, gloomily.
Not a chance when news gets about.
It's a pity. I like them.
Nice people. You never know.
I expect they knew the Greys. Will the inspector talk to them?
I imagine so. Where's Daisy? I know prevarication when I see it. I don't believe for a moment that she's too tired to come and have a drink.
It was the first excuse that came to mind. And true, besides. Vera said she kept nodding off, though she seemed quite alert when I was interviewed.
Alec groaned.
Great Scott! How the deuce does she do it? And what the deuce is Underwood thinking of to let her?
Does she make a habit of sitting in on police interrogations?
Yes. Give her an inch. My fault, I suppose. When I first met her, I was short of men, and I let her help me. She took shorthand notes and typed them up for me.
Nothing so formal for Inspector Underwood. Vera wanted her hand held, which she allowed. Then she stayed to see if I needed support. I didn't, but she looked so comfortably ensconced in her chair that I couldn't bear to oust her. Not that I minded her being present. She must have stayed with Izzy, too, or she'd be here by now.
Where's Vera?
She went upstairs. She was pretty upset, in spite of Daisy's support.
Not everyone can be as blasé about a police interrogation as you appear to be.
It's not just that. Willie frowned in thought. She's been...
Hold on a minute. Someone's coming over.
A corn-blonde young man had just walked in, scanned the room, and spotted Willie. After a moment's hesitation, he headed for Alec's table. In spite of his cocky stride and a gleaming smile, he looked worried. As he came closer, Alec saw that he wasn't as young as he'd appeared through the haze of smoke in the bar. 30, or even 35. Nonetheless, he was extremely good-looking. His navy suit was in the latest style, double-breasted, with pencil stripes, wide trousers and sleeves, slightly tailored waistline, and wide lapels with rounded tips. His tie was striped with a hideous shade of mauve. Alec said in a low voice,
"A secret admirer?"
"Certainly not," Willie snapped. "Miss Chandler, I've been hoping to run across you." "Hello, Mr. Vaughan," she greeted him, coldly polite. The estate agent, Alec recalled.
"Sorry to butt in, old chap. I won't be a moment. How are you liking the house, Miss Chandler? No problems?"
"None that we can blame on you," Willie said sarcastically.
"Oh, I... good. Heard from Judith yet, Mrs. Gray?"
"No, and we hardly expect to."
"She might send her address so that you could forward anything she left behind."
"She didn't leave anything that wasn't included in the contract of sale, and she hasn't sent her address. Sorry." Willie didn't sound in the least apologetic.
"Sorry to bother you. You will let me know if you get her address?"
She sighed. "I'll tell Miss Sutcliffe you're asking for it. She's the one who sorts the post."
"Thanks ever so. It's just,
I'm sure you want to go and join your friends, Mr. Vaughan. Goodbye." He went off at last, disconsolate.
"What was that all about?"
Alec asked. "I'm not sure. He came to the house one evening. I was the only one at home. I was tired, and the others went to the cinema. I didn't invite him in."
"You don't like him, do you?"
It was more of a statement than a question. "I don't think you should ask me that."
"You're right. I apologize."
Willie waved away his apology. "I forgot to tell the inspector he called. Does it matter?"
"Shouldn't think so. But do tell him when you get a chance. Vaughan asked the same questions at that time."
"Yes, but I don't remember that I bothered to mention it to Izzy. For all I know, she did find something from Mrs. Gray in the post and chucked it away, not having any use for it."
I'll suggest that Underwood ask her. No, I've got to keep my finger out of this pie. You ask Isabel, and if she says yes, advise her to report it to Underwood.
It would eliminate Mrs. Gray as victim, and possibly save a lot of effort, I suppose.
Especially if she remembered the address, or could find the paper. The Surette. No, stop me meddling.
As long as you don't actually get in touch with the Surette, or tell Underwood what to do, it's not meddling, Willie assured him. One can't help thinking about it.
But I shouldn't be talking about it.
Let's talk about something else, then. When do you think we'll be able to move back?
I don't think you should ask me that.
He quoted her own words. She laughed. Oh, dear. There really isn't any other topic of conversation at the moment, is there?
Would you like another sherry?
What I'd like is a large B&S. I'm not sure mixing the two is a good idea, though.
It won't hurt you. One B&S coming up.
While he was at the bar, Daisy and Isabel came in. Daisy did look tired, as Willie had claimed. Barely convalescent, yet she couldn't keep her nose out of a murder investigation, he thought with exasperated fondness. No point in trying to exact her promise not to get involved, but he would make her promise to take care of herself. He hoped her friends would keep an eye on her when he went back to London, if she insisted on staying. Isabel saw him, and they came over.
"What would you like?"
he asked. "Sherry, please," said Isabel.
"Not something stronger."
She grinned. "I was brought up Methodist. I still feel slightly guilty drinking sherry. I never developed a taste for cocktails, and beer is unladylike. I hope their sherry is better than what we offered you."
Mrs. Barnes, the doctor's wife, seemed to find it acceptable. "Daisy, the usual."
"Yes, please, darling. But let's take our drinks to the dining room. I asked them to reserve us a table. I'm so hungry I could eat a horse. Where are the others? Not still in that dismal parlour? Willie's over there." Isabel nodded towards the corner. "I'll fetch her." Alec added a sherry and a vermouth with soda to his order and asked the barman to have them brought to the dining room. The man grudgingly agreed.
"Vera's gone upstairs,"
Alec told Daisy.
"Willie said she's upset."
Daisy frowned. "She was in quite a state, and I can't work out why. I'll go and see if she wants to come down for supper."
"Let one of the others go, love. You're not altogether yourself yet."
"I do feel rather like a wet rag, but I'm sure it's just missing lunch. Tea was good, but didn't make up for it." She paused as the others came up. Then said, "Sally Hedger is waiting in the dining room this evening. I'm sure she'd take a tray up to Vera if she doesn't want to come down."
"I'll try to persuade her to come," said Willie. "It's not good for her, brooding alone. Besides, we need to talk."
"No talk about the case while we eat,"
Alec commanded. "All right, but I still think Vera should join us. If she hides herself away, Inspector Underwood is bound to find it suspicious." 12. Willie went upstairs to talk Vera into coming down, while Daisy, Alec and Isabel made their way to the dining room. Sally, a neat figure in her black frock and white apron, met them at the door with a smile and showed them to a table.
"Miss Layton and Miss Chandler will be down in a minute," Isabel told her.
"I heard you ladies are staying the night here, Miss Sutcliffe," Sally said diffidently.
More concerned than curious, she went on,
"I hope there's nothing wrong at Cherry Trees. What with the police from Wickham in the snug and all?"
"Don't worry, Sally. Nothing involving your aunt."
"Auntie May can take care of herself, miss. It's you I was worrying about. You're all right, then?"
"Except that we're hungry," said Daisy.
"What's on the menu?" "It's cold roast beef or lamb with salad and baked potatoes," Sally said apologetically. "We don't get that many people Sunday evenings."
"It's more choice than I'd be offering at home this evening," said Isabel. "I'll have the lamb, and I might as well order the same for the others."
Daisy and Alec both chose the cold beef. Daisy offered to swap with Willie or Vera if they preferred it. They arrived just as Sally went off to fetch the soup. Vera was red-eyed and subdued. She hardly ate anything, and spoke only when directly addressed, though she appeared to be interested when Alec and Willie talked about making the acquaintance of Dr. and Mrs. Barnes.
Sally had just brought apple crumble and a pitcher of custard when D.C. Pennycook entered and came over to their table.
D.I. Underwood would like to see you, sir, when you finished your supper.
In the snog?
Yes, sir.
5 minutes.
Thank you, sir.
The constable departed.
Oh, dear, said Daisy. I have a nasty feeling.
Daisy, Willie exclaimed. You don't think Underwood suspects Alec, do you?
I doubt it. No, I have a feeling Alec's going to end up more involved in the investigation than he claims he wants to be.
I'll do my very best to avoid such a fate,
Alec said dryly.
Daisy, make sure your friend's meals are put on our tab.
That provoked an outcry, but he insisted that it was a fair return for their offered hospitality at lunchtime. It wasn't their fault they'd been unable to carry out the offer.
It's my fault, Vera lamented. I wish I'd never mentioned the locked cellar.
Daisy had misremembered who had been the first to bring up the subject. She still couldn't see why it mattered, but the inspector had asked her. Alec looked interested, though no one who didn't know him extremely well could have guessed it. Perhaps they both assumed the person who drew attention to the inaccessible cellar could not be aware of what would be found when it was opened. On the other hand, whoever had shoved the victim down the stairs, assuming that was what had killed her, must have been on tenterhooks, waiting for the body to be found. So perhaps she'd prefer the inevitable discovery to be hurried up. Daisy could imagine Vera being unable to stand the suspense. However, she could not imagine Vera doing the shoving, unless the victim had died of poison, or stabbing, or something else, and had then been dumped in the cellar. Of course, only Willie had had the slightest idea that Alec's skills might include picking locks. Yet she was the one who had blithely fetched the wire for him to make the attempt. Even given her fundamentally cheerful disposition and the inevitability of eventual discovery, Daisy found it inconceivable that she would have shown no signs of uneasiness. The likeliest culprit of the three was Isabel, without question. She spent more time in the house, so had more opportunity. Tall and sturdy, she was physically capable of the deed. Her choice to sell her family home in Yorkshire and move to Buckinghamshire showed her decisive and resolute. Daisy hadn't witnessed her losing her temper, but it wasn't difficult to envision. Angry, Isabel would be formidable. But Daisy had no idea what, if anything, would make her angry enough to resort to violence. Not that it mattered. Far more likely was that the murder had occurred before the friends moved in. Daisy hoped Detective Inspector Underwood was of the same mind. At this point in her musings, Alec excused himself and stood up to leave. Daisy realized she had consumed half her crumble without tasting a bite.
Eating in your sleep, love?
Alec teased.
Better not stay up late.
How long do you think Underwood will keep you?
Your guess is as good as mine.
How annoyed is he about your being on the spot?
Your guess is as good as mine.
Darling, you must have some inkling.
Ambivalent, if you insist.
That's no help.
Sooner or later he'll come down on one side or the other. I mustn't keep him waiting.
He departed. Daisy, is there any chance Alec will be put in charge? Willie asked.
I very much doubt it, whether the inspector wants him or not.
Underwood can't suspect him.
You never know. He's a witness, at least. He can't very well investigate himself.
Willie giggled. No, it sounds ridiculous and unethical, if not actually against the rules.
The press would have a heyday. I wonder how long it'll be before they arrive.
Vera quailed.
Oh, no. Not tonight, surely.
People must have seen the police at Cherry Trees. Someone will have notified the local paper by now. Vera heaved a sigh of relief.
The Bucks Free Press doesn't come out till Friday. Thank heaven.
If they have a single enterprising reporter, he'll sell a tip to one of the nationals. But they'd have to get here tonight to publish the news in tomorrow morning's papers. Let's go and have coffee in the parlour, Isabel proposed. Nobody can bother us there. Except a female reporter. But Daisy kept quiet, not wanting to sow further alarm and despondency. If she were a newspaper editor, she'd consider the story of a murder in a house inhabited by three single women to call for the feminine point of view. Sally arrived to clear the table.
Will you have coffee? She offered.
Could we have it in the parlour? Said Isabel.
Yes, of course, Miss Sutcliffe.
As the others trailed out, Daisy said, Sally, put everyone's dinner on our bill, please.
All right, Mrs. Fletcher. That's ever so nice of you.
She lowered her voice to a whisper.
That Sergeant Harris is in the public. He's telling everyone the detective that's in Mr. Whitford's snug won't let the ladies go home.
Has he said why?
Not outright. Just nasty hints. That's his way. Oh, dear. Thank you for telling me, Sally.
Daisy hurried after her friends. As soon as the door of the ladies' parlour shut behind her, she warned them that rumours were already flying, no doubt growing more shocking with every repetition.
Inevitable, Isabel said. We're the obvious suspects. In fact, the only ones, as far as I can see.
Oh,
Vera moaned.
We've got to face the facts, Vera. There isn't anyone else.
I'm not so sure of that, Willie argued. What about Donald Vaughan?
Methinks the gentleman doth protest too much, said Daisy.
Yes, and he wasn't his usual bumptious, obnoxious self this evening. All that show of inquiring after her could be a ruse to divert suspicion.
Could be. As far as the investigation is concerned, it's very early days yet. The police don't know yet what they're looking for or whom to ask. For a start, we seem to be taking it for granted that the remains are Mrs. Gray's. Admittedly, she doesn't sound like a particularly pleasant person, though I don't know enough about her to judge. When they begin to dig into her background, they may find she has dozens of enemies.
Willie grinned. Dozens? All right, several. Not to mention friends who would know when she left town.
And whether she left town.
If they saw her off, or have heard from her since. When did you see her last?
We signed the papers on September the 16th. I didn't see her after that.
Vera nodded agreement.
Neither did I, Isabel confirmed, nor hear from her. I was a bit surprised. I'd expected a few last-minute adjustments to what she wanted to leave for us.
Such as? Daisy asked.
Oh, for instance, in the linen cupboard, there's a set of initialed silver-plated napkin rings that look like a family heirloom. She might have forgotten those and decided she wanted to keep them after all. I didn't really think too much about not hearing from her. Just assumed she was satisfied.
From what little I saw of her, said Willie, she's the sort who's never satisfied.
That's why I was a bit surprised. She was impatient, too, and liable to make up her mind without due consideration.
In any case, she's not necessarily the victim, Daisy reminded them. We already decided she could have been the murderer, or it could be someone else entirely, nothing to do with her, Someone taking advantage of the house being empty to dispose of an inconvenient body.
Do you write fiction as well, Daisy? Isabel inquired. That sounds like a plot for a thriller.
No, Daisy said crossly. I feel as if we're stuck in a shilling shocker.
Vera's voice was shaky.
I don't know how you can be so calm about it.
Getting all het up doesn't help, Isabel pointed out. In fact, it makes everything seem 10 times worse than it really is.
Willie stuck up for Vera.
She can't help it. You have nerves of steel, and I can usually see the funny side. Daisy, do you think the police will seriously consider the theory of the empty house used as a dumping ground by strangers?
It's not a theory, only a vague hypothesis. What Alec would call wild speculation. But they have to take all possibilities seriously, especially when they have so little to go on.
Sally came in with a tray of coffee cups and a pot.
I brought a cup for Mr. Fletcher too, she said, just in case.
He's still with the inspector?
Yes, madam.
Thank you, Sally.
Daisy heaved herself out of her chair.
I'm going to tell Underwood about Sergeant Harris spreading rumours.
The sooner that's put an end to, the better. Not to mention trying to find out what's going on between Underwood and Alec.
Sit down and drink your coffee first, said Isabel. You don't want to fall asleep in the middle of your sleuthing.
I'm not sleuthing.
Daisy subsided and took the cup Isabel handed her.
Not really. And don't you dare suggest to Alec that I am. He hates to admit that sometimes I'm helpful, not just interfering.
13.
What's yours, sir?
D.I. Underwood greeted Alec. A promising beginning. Alec decided to reward his earlier abstemiousness.
Whiskey and soda. A small one, thanks.
Off you go, Pennycook.
Alec took a seat.
What can I do for you, Inspector?
For the present, nothing, sir. Nothing official, that is. I've spoken to my super on the telephone, and he says he can't make any decisions till he's talked to your super. Superintendent Crane, I told him. That's right.
That's the man.
Have you informed him of the situation, sir?
I thought I'd wait till the morning and catch him at the yard. He gets a little testy when disturbed on a Sunday evening.
I persuaded Mr. Perry to wait till tomorrow.
Underwood and Alec exchanged a smile of complicity. Managing superior officers was part of being a copper.
What did he have to say when you told him about me?
Blast, followed by damn. As he absorbed the implications. Those weren't the actual words he used, mind you. He was in the Navy, and he has some salty profanity at his command. But once I'd got him to consider my plan calmly, he was all in favour.
Somehow, I'm not surprised. In essence, your plan is to use the services of the Yard without the county having to pay for them.
Underwood grinned.
Yes. Do you think your super will go along with it?
It's not impossible, if I'm not urgently needed elsewhere. You'd have to stop the nonsense about keeping your eye on me as a material witness. Save it for Mr. Parry, if you must. Crane wouldn't like it a bit. Casting aspersions on one of his officers isn't going to win his cooperation.
I already dropped that line. What would help?
Alec eyed him appraisingly.
Can I trust in your discretion? And Parry's?
If we can trust in your innocence.
Touché. May I take it you're prepared to extend the same belief to my wife?
Unofficially, by all means. I'd be astounded if Mrs. Fletcher played any role in the crime. But I'm sure you realise that officially she can't be dismissed so easily, as accessory after the fact, at least. She's known one of the women for many years, and appears to be on intimate terms with the